around the flood is Inside Motorsport.
Well, once again, we're back for another weekend's motorsport, and it's Colin Ford here behind the panel. Peter Norton, you're back with us again this week, and of course, being the Honda Indy 300, obviously, you'd be like a hog in heaven, wouldn't you?
Yes, I love this stuff. The kart racing always puts on a fantastic show, and this race again showed that Queensland's always very good for upsets and plenty of action, plenty of carnage, and yes, quite an interesting, exciting race. I have to say I'm a little bit concerned, though, leading into the Australia's biggest race of the year coming up, Bathurst, and the Channel 10 are really not in fine form. But anyway, it was a fantastic race, and we'll run through a few results and things a little bit later in the show.
That's right. Of course, we've got lots of news of motorsport happening around Australia and around the world. Of course, last weekend we saw the final round of the Formula One World Championship, Michael Schumacher taking out his first Formula One Championship with Ferrari, the first driver championship for Ferrari for 21 years. Big celebrations in Italy at the end of that, and that was obviously something that, as I say, the Tifosi went wild.
Yes, actually coming up during this week will be the Ferrari Owners Register having their annual convention or whatever they call it, and they'll have that little extra to celebrate, of course. The Ferrari fans are just so fanatical. I've been in touch with some of my friends in Canada. They're equally over the moon about the Ferrari victory. So that's pretty fantastic stuff for them.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the first time that the Ferrari drivers won in 21 years, first driver. And next weekend, of course, they're going to go and try and take out the Daily Double. If they can win in Sepang in the Malaysian Grand Prix, they'll be going for the Manufacturers' Championship as well as the Drivers' Championship, so that'll really make Ferrari's year.
Yes, it's been a long time coming, hasn't it, that they've really struggled. They've thrown away some fantastic opportunities, but this year they've finally put enough positive things together. And yeah, let's hope that they can take out the Daily Double.
Mm. Well, anyhow, we have now a report from Jonathan Ledyard of the BBC about last week's results from Suzuka.
Michael Schumacher was as good as his word. And when Schumacher's good, he is very good. He vowed here 12 months ago that 2000 would be his year. And around the figure of 8 that is this special Suzuka circuit, his 8th victory of the season, on the back of his 8th pole of the year, delivered the title which Ferrari seemed to have been chasing for an eternity. 7,700 days, if you're counting, from that mad moment at Monza when a fuzzy-haired South African called Jody Scheckter brought Italy to a standstill in 1979. Ferrari's Tifosi had found it difficult to take to Schumacher. He came to them in 1996 after two acrimonious and controversial championships with Benetton. His reluctance to speak Italian made him appear even more cold and aloof. And when he deliberately drove into Jacques Villeneuve at Jerez in 1997, the respect which his ability undoubtedly commanded was in danger of drying up. Today, though, goodwill and champagne will be a ready, intoxicating mix in Italy, not to mention Germany, which cherishes him as a national hero. Mika Hakkinen deserves admiration for his part in the thrilling climax, but he and McLaren well know you can't afford to give Schumacher a head start, which saw him reel off a hat-trick of victories in Australia, Brazil and San Marino. The killer blow was another smoking engine failure at Indianapolis 2 weeks ago, which let Schumacher off the leash again. His conduct isn't always appealing. His character will never have the finesse or charisma of his hero Ayrton Senna. But Schumacher has been the star attraction of 2000. He's always the man to beat, the benchmark for his generation. And like Senna, he's now a 3-time world champion. Now that Schumacher's done it once with Ferrari, who's to say he won't do it again? And again. After all, another team in red called Manchester United waited long enough for a championship, and look what they've gone on to achieve.
We'll trust the British commentator bringing in the story of a British soccer team in red who didn't win for a long time and kept on winning. So, typical BBC coverage, as they say.
What a logical connection. Red, Italians, and English soccer. Yes, you really have to stretch it for that one. And love him or hate him, you have to respect the skill and ability of Michael Schumacher.
That's right, he's proven his point. You know, he's really, as I said, he's the one driver who could bring the Ferrari up to the level of the McLarens, and in some ways the McLarens team sort of dropped the bundle a little bit here and there. Unfortunately what happened for Mika Hakkinen at Indianapolis with his engine problem there, which has, you know, traced down to a faulty valve. Those are the sort of things that can ruin a Formula One championship for you.
Yeah, that's right, but yeah, that's motorsport. You have to just work hard and minimise those sort of down times.
Mm. Well, naturally enough, they were able to get hold of Michael Schumacher after the event, and the interview there coming up from the BBC with Michael Schumacher giving his impression after winning the World Championship?
It's difficult to find proper words for such feeling. I mean, there was such an outbreak of emotion initially when I crossed the line. I mean, this conditions were difficult today. The rain, no rain, little bit more. The upgoing, the downgoing through the season, even with a victory, the way we did it in a fight until the... a bit easier for me. it's simply outstanding and no words for it to explain it.
Championship. Were there periods during that period of time, during that period, where you thought it's never going to happen again?
No, I didn't think it would never going to happen again, but obviously every year it didn't happen. It got longer and longer, and you somehow get more upset that it doesn't work finally, even though we always felt we had an opportunity and then we couldn't use it for many reasons. And finally doing it, I mean, it's simply great. I mean, imagine what is going on right now in Italy. That must be simply amazing.
The race turned at the second pit stop, and we heard you on the driver really thanking Ross. I mean, what was the conversation between you two around that time on the second stop?
Basically, as we saw Mika going in for his pit stop, we knew we had a couple more laps to go, and we knew these were the crucial laps. The problem was I had traffic, and I wouldn't say it was too easy to pass them, because it cost me a little bit of time. And then when I entered the pits, there was this Benetton spinning in front of me and moving backwards, and I didn't know where he was going to go. So I thought it isn't enough, simply, because it was spitting off rain and I wasn't really thinking I was going as fast as I should have done. And then I came out and Ross kept me updated, said, it's looking good down the pit lane in 80 kilometers per hour. And he says, I was just waiting for the word, no, it was not looking good enough. Or things like this, because you cannot see where is your competitor. And then he said, it's looking bloody good. And that was obviously an amazing moment. And from that on, I mean, you simply just hope nothing breaks. The rain, which was going on and off again, wasn't helpful, because as you're in front, you don't want to make a mistake. If you're behind, you somehow have nothing to lose. You have to keep pushing. And it wasn't the ideal circumstance, but in the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether it's ideal or not. It was enough.
Yeah, Michael Schumacher there, obviously a little bit of emotion in the voice. If people have seen the coverage of him just after he crossed the line of the checkered flag, the way he was pounding that steering wheel on that Ferrari, he was really ecstatic.
I saw somewhere that they thought he actually bent the steering wheel in his little frenzy of cheer there.
Well, I thought that'd make a good souvenir for someone. I'm sure there's probably a member of the Ferrari pit crew who made sure that when it seemed that car pulled up, the hand went in, got the steering wheel out, but probably went back in while they did the weighing and checking. That was one of the interesting things too. Was, apparently there was a time after when the car was in Parc Fermé after event where everybody was sort of waiting for the obligatory appeal or technical infringement to sort of notice to come from McLaren. Nothing happened. It was, you know, you've won the championship, thank you very much. And Mika Häkkinen in the press conference afterwards was apparently very, very polite about things.
Yes, that's right. I think McLaren and Mika Häkkinen really are a credit to the sport, the way they behave this year, because it was last year, I think, at Suzuka, where there was the protest about some of the parts on the Ferrari. Or was that the year before? Anyway, yes.
Last year.
Last year, yes. In recent history, there have been protests and all sorts of strife about Ferrari going into the final round of the championship. So, yes, I think it's a credit to all involved that it's much cleaner, and some kind words. It really is good for the sport.
Mm. And, of course, the word now is that having won the championship, that things could be up in the air with Ferrari's design and engineering team. The word that Ross Brawn, of course, who's sort of a part of the brains behind the team, Rory Byrne, aerodynamics and engineering man again, both people that have got very strong connections with Michael Schumacher, both have been wanting to retire for a long time, may now say, well, okay, look, we've got the 2001 car basically designed, it's ready to go, We're going to go and find a beach somewhere, sit back and relax. Good luck.
There's a lot to be said for going out on top, isn't there? There's too many stories of people who've stuck around for a couple of years too long. And actually, later in the show, we've got a few bits of an interview from Daryl Waltrip. And I think he's a prime example of what happens if you just keep sticking it out that little bit too long. You become a little bit of an embarrassment.
Mm. And that is the real danger if you, you know, do stay along too long. Because in this guy's cases, you know, like, you can only sort of keep trying to, you know, sort of do what you do. You know, all you can keep doing is trying to make a better mousetrap, as it essentially is. And after, I suppose, after, you know, 20, 30 years of doing that, you must reach a stage and say, look, I'm only going to do something different. I'm going to design a better roller skate or something. But no, I think it's, I'd say, very, very likely with the fact that Schumacher has finally won the championship for Ferrari, we'll probably see now a bit of a change. They'll always try and keep people if they can, but I suppose a number of people, and their basic premise was, we get to the point where he wins, when he's won, then we'll go and do something else.
And who knows, it could be 21 years till they win it again.
Yeah, heaven above. Interesting note that one of the visitors up in Queensland called IndyCoast, that's the Honda Indy 300, was Rubens Barrichello, en route from Suzuka in Japan, sleeping in Malaysia, and his comments were, I couldn't think of a better place to spend the week in between.
Well, that's right. If you're in the neighbourhood, you might as well pop in, see some of your countrymen racing in another series, and, of course, the scenery up in Queensland is pretty good as well.
Mm. And, of course, still talking Formula 1, the word this week that Mark Webber is fairly close to possibly signing his deal finally with Benetton.
Yes, that's pretty exciting news. It's been sort of on the edge there for quite a while. Everyone's been expecting it. And yes, all of the positive signs are coming out of the people involved, and it seems as though it won't be the usual, you know, sign them up for life type deal, because that's what Mark Webber was determined to avoid at all cost. It was looking like a 3-year testing deal with a run in Formula 3000, a rather high profile and well supported run, so it's looking good.
And of course, the beauty of it is that Benetton does become Renault in 2002, I think it is. So it's the right place to be at the right time.
Yes, so all the best for Mark Webber there, and we'll keep watching with interest.
Yeah, the lovely sounds of a Ferrari Formula 1 car. Well, last week as well, we reported about the problems after the Tour de Course World Round of the World Rally Championship. Of course, Colin McRae involved in a very, very major accident there in his Ford Focus, trapped in the car for some time. And, you know, it wasn't just him, it was Freddie Loy. Freddie Loy, I couldn't believe when I read that he had crashed his Mitsubishi from the first corner of the first stage.
Yeah, well, he just signed a contract for, I think, the next year, so he must have been feeling pretty confident about his place in the team. So to celebrate, you throw it off on the first corner. It's not the way I'd celebrate, because it was another pretty nasty crash, except he came out of it quite a lot better than Colin McRae, of course.
And Colin, during the week, has had surgery on his cheek, a plate put in. San Remo Rally starts actually tomorrow. It's one of those rallies, for some reason, who knows why, they, instead of running on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they run on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It must be tied in with, I think, public holidays up in Italy or something like that. But anyhow, we've got a report from the BBC where they're talking to the manager of Ford Motorsport in the UK about the accident and about Colin McRae's chances of getting back into the car before the race San Remo.
He's certainly a lot better than he was on Saturday evening. He's now back in Edinburgh. He was checked by a surgeon there last night, and it appears as though they're going to do the operation on Friday.
And if they do it on Friday, how soon could he get back to driving his car again?
Well, we're all very optimistic that he can be fit for San Remo. I know he's put the surgeon and the doctors under pressure. He says that he wants to be fit, and I think he'll be desperate to get back in the car.
Right, because he's got, what, three more rallies this year, is that right?
Three more rallies, and there's four drivers now within 5 points of the World Championship, so it's still all to play for, and we're confident he'll be there.
Right, because he needs to be in all three, clearly, to have a chance of winning, doesn't he?
Yes, I mean, if he misses, it's going to make it then very, very difficult. for sure.
I haven't seen footage of what happened here, but I mean, judging by that description, he sounds as if he was lucky to escape with just those injuries, wasn't he?
Well, I must admit, I've had a really good look at the car, and he's a very, very lucky man. I think it's a credit to the strength of the whole car as well, but he's certainly a very lucky boy.
But you say, hopefully, by the end of this week, you reckon there'll be good news?
We're very confident at the moment that it'll be good news, yes. I mean, subject to how the operation goes, but the feeling is, and the will from him to actually be on the starting line in San Remo, I'm very confident to be there.
Yeah, interesting to see the fact that things have worked out well, and actually, I'll do now to put up the, another report from our good friends at the BBC, this time from our other friend Greg Strange, who we often get hold of from time to time. Used to be our man, used to cover things for the British Touring Car Championship, and his report on the arrangements for the lead up San Remo for Colin McRae.
McRae says his aim is to win in San Remo. If he does that, it'll be one of the most remarkable sports comebacks of the year. 2 weeks ago, he was airlifted to hospital after crashing out on the Rally of Corsica. His Ford Focus went 20 metres down an embankment, rolling as it went, and hitting a tree before coming to rest upside down. McRae, unconscious, was trapped in the wreckage, with his crash helmet jammed in the roll cage. It took rescuers 40 minutes to free him. Remarkably, his injuries were limited to a fractured cheekbone and bruised lung. Surgeons operated on Monday to put a plate across the cheekbone. Yesterday, they said he could race. Ford will name him as the nominated works driver for the San Remo, the 12th of this year's 14-round championship, and he'll begin practice on Monday.
Yeah, it's very, very lucky fellow. It's actually interesting that there were some photographs, I think, I'm trying to remember if I actually saw them, of the three accidents in terms of where the cars came to rest. And looking at all three, it was one of the situations where that you had quite a long drop-off on the from the side of the road down into the gully beside, and the distance that all three cars, that is, McLaren's Mitsubishi, McRae's Ford Focus, and Lawyer's Mitsubishi, dropped from below the road, is quite frightening. In the fact that, I suppose, it's something that says about the strength of the rally cars, that given the distance those cars fell from the road, doing high speed, that the driver survived only with basic minor injuries, is a real testament to just how good the safety features in those World Rally cars are.
Yes, and there's a lot of questions now being asked about the safety of that event. So many blind corners where the corners actually tighten on you, so you can't really judge the correct speed on entry. Puts a great deal of emphasis on the pace notes, and they keep adding stages, taking away stages to keep it fresh and exciting. But for many drivers now, that event is becoming too exciting, and they're really starting to ask questions, and also questions about the medical responses, calls for having a medical helicopter now to follow the field to really assist the response times there. I think that the Australian Rally Championship is really quite well placed. They have the first intervention vehicles spread throughout the field and through the stages, so the Australian Championship is definitely on par to the World Championship, and I think that maybe in some places that touch better. So I think Australians can be proud of what they've got. Also interesting is these guys go through many, many airports, and of course you expect people in motorsports to have steel plates and legs and things like that, but won't it be funny to watch McRae coming through airport security and the metal detectors picking up that steel plate in his cheek?
I reckon that's going to be really fun and games for McRae. But actually, you do get a certificate, a medical certificate, that indicates the fact you do have surgical steel implanted in your body. As you can imagine, Barry Sheen is a classic for setting them off.
He'd take hours through the airports, wouldn't he?
Oh, for sure.
This is Mario Andretti for Avalon Racing. Stay tuned for Inside Motorsports and all the news in the world of kart racing.
Yes, there were plenty of those sounds up on the Gold Coast today for the Honda Indy 300, where Adrian Fernandez took the victory in a very action-packed race. At the start of the race, all the eyes were on Gilles Defferrin, who's the current championship leader, and of course, reigning champion Juan Pablo Montoya,
And it was quite an exciting start, with De Ferran perhaps getting just the edge off the start line, getting his nose just in front, and unfortunately they came together on the first chicane. The chicane at the Gold Coast Circuit is quite a notorious place for accidents, and really the drivers should be thinking a little bit more about taking it easy through that turn, particularly with the championship at stake. Now there's quite a bit of debate about really who is at fault. The TV commentators quite clearly putting the blame on Montoya. They're putting the blame on Gilles De Ferran. I beg to differ there. I think Montoya is sort of studying the Formula One footage, and he's starting to practice for when he's up against the Formula One guys next year, and he took a leaf out of the book of Michael Schumacher and decided to do a bit of the squeeze act off the start line. And as I said, with Gilles De Ferran just that nose in front, I think it was a little bit inexcusable for Montoya to try to squeeze him up against the wall and trying to squeeze into the line going through that chicane. So I think Montoya was to blame there, and perhaps quite rightly, Montoya now is mathematically out of the championship, but it did ruin quite a good race. Also tied up in that accident was Dario Franchitti. How many races has he left this year packing his bags on the first lap? It really has been disappointing there. That left Paul Tracy to stream out smoother for lead. He was really going well, putting 1 second per lap on the rest of the field, and he did that for about the first 10 laps. And then something that we've seen before from Paul Tracy in the team cool green car, and that is electronic gremlins creeping in. He sort of trundled down an escape road, trying to stop and reset all the computers on board. And once he got it firing again, he sort of led a charge from the back of the pack, and we're really watching with a lot of interest to see if he could claim another victory from the back of the pack. Another leader at that time was Alex Tagliani, a rookie this year, and he blew his pit strategy basically, running out of fuel sort of one lap just before going into the pit, so he was out of the race. That left Jimmy Vassa, Michael Andretti and a few others to lead the race, we've had a few big names still there. Jimmy Vassa was very disappointed with some of the pit strategy. Many of the cars ducked into the pits when Paul Tracy had his little escape road incident, and they pulled out the yellow flag. So Vassa was very disappointed when he came out of the pits later in the race to find that many of the other competitors had got out before him. And that, of course, is because they required a whole lot less fuel. So Vassa was feeling very disappointed with the pit crew, perhaps unjustifiably there. But anyway, he sort of battled on for more of the race. Michael Andretti led for a while. The Ford engine let him down again.
Honestly, that was a major engine blow-up, obviously from the oil system, by the way, that fire came up in the smoke. It definitely wasn't fuel.
That's right. These cars with the ethanol-type fuel, they don't generate flame and smoke. So whenever you see that flame and smoke, it's definitely an oil fire. And yes, the Ford engines haven't had such a great run this year, and some of the teams are really looking at replacing their Ford engines with Toyotas and other things for next year, and we might have some news on that later in the show. Australia's hope in the race, Jason Bright. He had a pretty troubled weekend, having to dial himself into a new car and a new circuit, and unfortunately many of the practice sessions were wet, so he qualified. Well, people were putting it quite optimistically, saying he qualified 23rd or 24th, let's be honest, he qualified second last. And that's where he sort of started the race, and that's sort of where he was running for a great part of it. But with a lot of the attrition and drama going on throughout the field, he was his way up to fifth place, and things were looking good for the Aussie hope there. Unfortunately, he got tangled up with Roberto Moreno, or when Roberto Moreno lost it and stuck it into the wall, he got tied up with people trying to avoid that incident, and that put him out of the race, unfortunately.
Yeah, I must admit, not too bad, not too shabby a first appearance by Jason. Limited time in the car, first time in an Indy car race, I suppose, as a debut. Not too shabby, really.
Yes, that's right. It's not the way I'd like to sort of put on a show for the home crowd. I would like to do one or two races as preparation, so you can really go there prepared. So he really was up against it, and I agree, he did a fine job in the circumstances.
Hopefully we'll see him in the car again next year or another car next year.
Yes, that's right. I think his deal with the Queensland government does put him in that race for 3 years. But really, of course, what he wants is to get a full-time drive in the kart series, and then he can really show what he's capable of. Now, Roberto Moreno, he's a driver who had an even more miserable race. As I said, he stuck it into the wall, and that took him out. But he really struggled through qualifying in the first part of the race, and he really didn't show that he was a worthy championship contender, and this lousy result really wipes him out from the championship as well. So that sort of left really a situation of who wants to win this. No one really wanted to win it. Max Pappas and Paul Tracy were sort of fighting towards the end of the race, trying to get up and take it out. Paul Tracy got a little bit impatient, as he tends to do at times. His great aggressive driving style is exciting and fantastic to watch, but sometimes it's his undoing as well. And it sort of happened again. He gave Pappas a bit of a nudge, and then in trying to avoid the car in front of him, he managed to get out of the way, but then some of the backmarkers behind him slipped past both of them, and he sort of tangled on the next corner with some of those, and that put him out of the race, and that was pretty disappointing as well. That would have been quite exciting to watch Tracy to battle on to try to take victory. So that really left us with Adrian Fernandez. He's not one of the most high-profile drivers, but he is a consistent fighter in there, and he has won a few races this year, and that leads him second in the championship, so he may be the real contender there to take on Jules Affirin. For the rest of them, Paul Tracy may be a mathematical chance for the championship, but he really needs awful luck from the other drivers for him to clinch that one. Other drivers that are really seem to be out of it now include Kimi Brack, Jimmy Vassar, Roberto Moreno, Michael Andretti. They're just going to the final race now to put on a good show and to start thinking about next year. So the places were Adrian Fernandez from Kenny Brack, the rookie of the year. The position seems fairly certain for Kenny Brack, and we're still hoping that he can win a race. He's had so many seconds and thirds, he really is capable of bigger and better things. Jimmy Vassar battled on from what he saw as a poor pitch strategy to take out a fine third place. Cristiano D'Amato was fourth, Patrick Carpentier was fifth, Julio Castroneves in sixth, Michelle Jordan Jr. in seventh, from Tony Kanaan, Oriol Serva, and Mauricio Guzman taking out the final spot in the top ten. So it was a pretty exciting race.
Yep, one of those races that really had a lot of it was based around qualifying, a top qualifying session. We haven't got any hold of the post-race comments, but we do have some of the comments from the drivers following that qualifying session, which was really sort of a tit-for-tat session between the very late in the final session, because it had been wet and damp, very late in the session, some temperature started getting to the track and the tyres, and you had Montoya setting fastest time, then the Affirin came out and set fastest time, and the checkered flag had been shown for the end of the session, but Montoya was still on the track and going, and essentially he came out what would normally be the cool down lap and set fastest time again to take pole back from the Affirin, all within a matter of seconds.
Yes, it was pretty exciting stuff, and I think that's why I was bitterly disappointed to see Montoya out on that first lap. Some of the footage of him during practice was fantastic, using all the track, all of the kerb, and some of the footpath. I wanted to see that all day, so I think it was somewhat robbed.
Mm. Well, here's what Juan Montoya had to say after qualifying.
I think it was really good, you know, since this morning and since I've been here, the car has been really good. You know, yesterday I ran out of time with my tires and, you know, red flag. Today, you know, I went out and on my second lap, straight out, was as fast as yesterday, and it went red twice. So I said, oh, you know, the car is pretty good. And, you know, I did a couple of changes to the car to try and improve a little bit, and, you know, I was just pushing as hard as I could. And, you know, this is my last road course here, and, you know, it's very nice to be on the pole.
Like you were really hanging it out there, but just a tenth short. Tell us about the last lap.
Yeah, I mean, I knew I had to come up with something a little bit better than what I had before in that last lap, because Roger told me on the radio that it was P2, so I was really trying to put a nice lap together, and got a little bit crossed up a couple of times, and I think I had to get out of the throttle and lost a little bit of time like that. But, you know, I think nevertheless, front row is a good position for us.
Juan crossed the line on his quick lap right behind you. I mean, for how long did you think you had the pole back?
I didn't really. I mean, I just saw 6.18, and I thought, hopefully that would be enough. And then I asked Roger, he said, no, he beat you. He was right behind you, and he just beat you.
Tracy's fourth on the grid, Michael sixth. Your thoughts on the race?
Well, I like I said earlier, I still feel like we have to race well tomorrow, and if we want to win this championship at all. So our plan is to go for an attack straight away.
Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course, sitting there on the grid was our friend Kitty. The Scotsman, he also was not having much luck this weekend. And for him, it was a case of, well, he's going to throw on the grid, but taking out the opening lap practice. This is what he had to say about qualifying.
Yeah, the conditions were definitely difficult because of the, first of all, the rain this morning. We should look to go out and improve the car from yesterday because we just didn't have any track time. And even when we were running the end of the session this morning, it was still wet. So, went out to qualify and, you know, a bit of a guess on the settings, really. But it didn't matter because it's just yellow flag, yellow, red flag, red flag, red flag all the time. So we came in and put the second set of tyres on, and I think at that point nobody had improved their time. The track was definitely getting better every lap, so we put the new tyres on and got traffic on a couple of laps and got one lap that I really was reasonably happy with. It was pretty much the limit of the car anyway, and I was on a better lap and I made a mistake my last lap before the checker, so kind of a bit disappointed, but you know, well, I think we're looking good for the race, certainly looking better than we were yesterday this time.
Also on the card at the Honda Indy 300 on the Gold Coast was, of course, the V8 supercars. And the Ford comeback continued there, with Paul Radicich taking out two of the three races, and he also finished second in today's final race. But in that final race, Russell Engel managed to pass him late in the race to take out one Holden victory. It was also quite notable for another couple of things. Something that made a Ford fan rather quite happy was seeing Mark Scaife lose it on one of the chicanes and stick it into the wall. Now, of course, that sounds rather mean and nasty, but of course Mark Scaife has had such a fantastic year this year, and you know, we don't see these sorts of slip-ups from him very much, so for a Ford fan that made me quite happy. Also quite remarkable there was that Craig Lowndes was able to avoid that little incident, otherwise the HRT boys might have had a lot of work to do in the next couple of weeks. But also quite notable there was that the number of people who managed to stick their cars into the wall or into each other, and it was the car that they had ready for Bathurst. Now, I think that the V8 supercar races at the Gold Coast have proven time in and time out that it is a destroyer of cars. I remember quite well a couple of years ago that Glenn Seaton stuck a car into the wall quite hard, and it really has proven that it's not a place to take your number one car. John Balfour one took a very old car there just to keep his better car all nice and shiny, ready for the less risky races. So it was Garth Tander, Steve Richards and Greg Murphy all doing a significant damage to the car that they have ready for Bathurst. And I guess maybe it's the V8, the light series, that means that you really want to keep your spare car shiny and sell it off rather than keeping it in the garage gathering dust and only pulling it out for some of these support races. Yeah, it's one of the decisions you have to make.
Well, joining us now is from one of the other races that was running at the Honda Indy 300. We had some races for the GDP Nations Cup car, and joining us now is Chris Nixon. Chris, how'd the guys go up there?
G'day, Craig. Let's just let this helicopter pass. And give me that question again, please.
Well, it's Colin here, Chris.
Hi, Colin.
How did the guys go up there at the Honda Indy? Anybody do the wrong thing, and what are the results?
Well, it was a pretty interesting third race today in the GTP Nations Cup. Unlike most of the other races up here this weekend, with the exception of the Champ Cars, of course, ours was a championship round. It was round 7 of the 8 rounds in our series this year. It was an interesting race to get today, as it's been all weekend. Jimmy Richards won the first two races on Friday and Saturday, and started from pole today, but it wasn't Jim's race. He ended up finishing third. Peter Fitzgerald in the other GT3 molted away at the start and had an all-the-way win from Paul Stokel. But of course the upshot of all that was that Jim still had enough points to wrap up the inaugural GTP Nations Cup, and so he is now the 2000 champion. His nearest contender was Mark Noske, and Noske was really in a desperate position today. He had to get maximum points and hope that Jim didn't get full points in the third race to have any chance of taking the fight into Bathurst next month. But far from that happening, in fact, Noske had a DNF just when he needed most to win some good points. He started off fourth on the grid. He was desperately trying to work his way up to the back of Jimmy. He tried to go under Vita Bradbury in the Porsche, in the TNT Porsche. They had it coming together. Basically, it was Bradbury's corner, and Nosky was stuck between a push and a concrete wall. And that was the end of his race on lap 2 out of 6. So from then on, Jimmy was able to cruise along in third place. He knew the position. He knew he didn't have to score any higher position than that. Nosky's chances of keeping the championship alive, or the one place in the championship alive, went out the window at that point. And so too did, in fact, his second place in the championship, because Fitzy's strong weak wind, and particularly his win today, meant that he's moved up to second in the series. So, quite a disappointing day for Mark Nosky.
So once again, the reliability of the Porsches is really what's been coming through.
Well, it seems so, although there's nothing wrong with the Ferrari's reliability today, until the stage that hit the wall. And he had a secondary collision when he tried to reverse out of the situation he was in, and reversed into Peter Bradbury, and it appears that, in fact, the secondary damage might have been what put him out of the race. So a very frustrated and disappointed Mark Nosky, I'm sure, but he'll go to Bathurst in a few weeks' time with still a job to do, because he has to get himself from third place in the championship now up to second again. There's only about 4 points difference in it, so it'll be a great fight then between Fitzy and Mark Nosky in the Ferrari. Most of the Porsche drivers I spoke to today, however, seriously predict that the Ferrari will be one of the cars to beat at Bathurst. They think that it's going to be very, very strong at Bathurst.
And of course, no doubt by the time they get to Bathurst, they'll probably be all planning a few little tweaks for the cars.
Yes, I should think so. Just harking back to Richard's win again, it's very interesting to know that he has competed at 9 out of the 10 Gold Coast Indy events. He's competed in 6 different categories. He's competed in NASCAR, Oscar, V8, GTP, GTP Nations Cup, and Super Touring. Typical of Jim, he won two races this weekend. He won two races last year. He's won in NASCAR, as we know. Been very, very successful. In fact, he's probably the most successful individual driver out of any category, certainly including the Champ Car, who's competed at Indy over all those years. And this is yet another title to Richard's mantelpiece.
That just goes to show that Jim Richards has definitely got a pedigree there, and the racing figure, I think, will probably make it very, very hard for everybody to try and beat him when he actually gets to Bathurst, which he does know like the back of his hand.
He does know like the back of his hand, but he and Peter Fitzgerald were the first to say that they think the Ferrari is going to be quick there. It's streamlined, it's top end, and it'll be interesting to see. And, of course, Nosky now has very little to lose by really going for it. Whereas Jimmy's got the championship in the bag, but he always likes to win, Jim. And not only did he win, but he came out with a car without a mark on it. One of the few, I suspect, who was able to claim that.
Good on, Jim. Well, Chris Nixon, thanks very much for being up there, and what's been happening with the GDP Nation stuff up the Honda Indy 300.
Thank you very much, Colin, and listeners. We'll talk to you in a few weeks, no doubt, to tell you all about Bathurst preparations.
No worries. Thank you very much, Chris Nixon. Chris Nixon there up on the Gold Coast. You hear all the things still going, helicopters and things going left, right and centre.
Yes, the Inside Motorsport really takes you there. We've got all sorts of noises live from the events, and of course a few minutes ago we had that siren and stuff on one of the interviews, so yes, we'll really take you there.
Well, the man, he was in the right place a few weeks ago. Now he's at the wrong end of the world where the action's taking place. Here is Craig Revell.
Well, he's still in a pretty good place, enjoying a few NASCAR races now, so, yeah, who can criticise that?
Well, here's our postcard from the USA with Craig Revell. Peter, you were talking a little bit earlier this evening, and here's what he's got to say about where he's at in the USA.
Hello, who's enjoying a great trip there of Formula One, NASCAR and all sorts of stuff? How's it going, Craig?
Well, not too bad, not too bad. A hectic weekend for us, and I must apologise to everyone for last weekend when we were at Charlotte, the Lowe's Motor Speedway, and saw Bobby Labonte really strengthen his title chances in the NASCAR Winston Cup and put on a great display, which perhaps was helped by what Ricky Rudd, who finished in third place, had called a phantom yellow. He certainly didn't see anything on the track that required the yellow, and the Ford, the Texaco Haviland Ford, was a much better car on old tyres after a long run than on the new tyres. So once the yellow flags were up the way, well, then it was Labonte who was the best on new boots. And he went on to, as I said, strengthen his position in the championship. This weekend, they go from the 1.5 mile oval of Lowe's Motor Speedway to the Monster 2.6 mile oval, that is Talladega Super Speedway. For a number of reasons, it's an interesting race this weekend, and, well, unfortunately, I have to report another horrific accident at Texas Motor Speedway on Friday night, where a young driver by the name of Tony Roper went headfirst into the wall, and although I have not heard confirmation of it, it does seem like it was a fatal accident, and that's terrible news there. An ASA driver who is just in his first year of NASCAR Craftsman Truck, and yeah, just for making the third driver and making all three series now having fatalities in this season. The two, of course, one in Busch Grand National, which was Adam Petty, another in Winston Cup, which was, of course, Kenny Irwin Jr., and now Tony Roper. As I said, it does seem to be a very bad year for all the fans of NASCAR Winston Cup, and particularly those three families. And, well, one family that has had to overcome quite a bit this year is the most famous family in NASCAR racing, and that is Richard Petty. And we had an opportunity yesterday to have a chat with the legend of Richard Petty, and I first started asking him about how his father got involved in NASCAR racing.
Now, my father was a big road racer as far as racing up down highway. They always had a old model car with a new model engine in it with dead horsepower and all that. They used to race on Saturday night, race for a lot of money. They didn't race for fun of it. And then once in 1949, when Jeff started doing it, he said, you know, maybe I'd make some money at this. So he got into racing on Sunday instead of Saturday night. You know, when I first started working on the cars when I was like 11 or 12 years old, my big ambition was just to work on the cars. And probably until I was 18 or 19 years old, I never even thought that much about driving. I was still interested in working on the cars. And when I got to be 21, then I started driving. So I started from the engineering part of it, working on the race car. And that was my first love. And then once I drove, then I working on it becomes second love. First love is driving.
And of course, with someone stepping into the famous number 43 first, was probably Hillen, and now it's John Andretti. And I asked if he ever had the driver say if there was any pressure on them by driving the 43.
You know, nobody ever does like with this. Would that make me get a more in the yard or wash in the house? You know, John's done a real good job. John's personality fit in real good for Pitt Enterprises. You know, he's laid back, low-key. If he wins, he's excited about it. If he loses, he don't get too excited about it. But, you know, it's just everyday deal. So he's been really good with us. And, you know, next year, Kyle will move to the 45 car, the Sprint being their being advertised in that car. John will still be with the Curios. And then we've got a new boy coming up to drive with you. Georgia Pacific. That's another sponsorship. We'll have three Dodgers next year. Then we also have a truck in the truck series. We'll probably have a race car too. We're only loading the race cars right now. You still look good to us. You know, we had Adam coming along, had a 5-year plan, you know, to bring in new blood and new deals with the Dodge. So we still got the 5-year plan. We just had to put Chuck Jones in basically for where he's going to drive the 44 car. Sort of plug him in where Adam was supposed to go. But, you know, we still got a plan. I don't know if it will work or not, but we had a plan, and we found that Pitt Enterprises back up to the level it was 10, 15 years ago. And so we figured new blood, young blood, would clog us on tape. So we're still on our Joe plan there. We just got to make sure it works.
Well, Petty Enterprises is coming back from a tragic year, and well, if you put the tragedy of Adam Petty aside, they also had a few changes sponsorship-wise, which saw STP move itself from major sponsorship to minor sponsorship. But they have done quite a bit of work at Petty Enterprises to strengthen the foundation. And in fact, when I get back, there is a lot more to that interview, which we'll be able to let you in on over the next few weeks. And of course, well, Talladega Super Speedway, 2.6 miles around, and you really can't appreciate it until you're standing on the inside of the turn looking at the roofs of the car as they drive by. And a man who almost 30 years ago made his first Winston Cup appearance is Darrell Waltrip. In the meantime, he has won NASCAR championships and a whole host of races, and in the late 80s, early 90s, was voted by the fans as the most popular NASCAR driver in Winston Cup racing at that time. He is out there running in the 66 Kmart car, and tomorrow will be his final start at the Talladega Super Speedway. And in fact, they have taken the car that he started in 29 years ago, the restored car, and he will be doing some laps in that restored car before he goes out into his Monte Carlo to race in tomorrow's race, or this morning, or this afternoon's race, as it is in our time. And we were fortunate enough to also have quite a long chat to Darrell Waltrip, and you'll be hearing a bit more about that in the weeks to come. But here are a few thoughts from DW.
Long time ago. 800 and some races to go, so for me, I think it's my 810 start, somewhere along in there. So, obviously running a lot of laps. The thing I remember the most about them was I led. First time I'd ever been to a track like this. Well, I think I've been to Daytona in a sportsman race. It was the first time I'd been to a Winston Cup race in 1972, and I had a pretty good car, actually. It's going to be here tomorrow. I'm going to drive around the track, as a matter of fact. And but I led a few laps in that race and actually had a very legitimate chance at winning. That was based on a tire controversy that was going on at the time. Goodyear had come here with a new treaded tire. They used to run they still do, the slick tire. This was the only place where we ran the slick tire. Everywhere else they run a treaded tire. And so they had come here and done some testing, and they determined that they would run the treaded tire here like they ran everywhere else. Well, lo and behold, they get in the race, the speeds go up, the tires are flying all to pieces. Well, when I bought my car from Holman and Moody, the last place it had raced was here. And so when I bought it, I got, I think I got 12 or 16 tires with it, which happened to be Talladega tires. So that had a lot to do with me running here the first time, because I had the tires and the car had been raced here before. And so, you know, I figured Talladega was a good place to start off. So lo and behold, we get in the race. And all the fast guys, Richard, Buddy, Cale, Bobby, Donnie, everybody's having tire trouble. Their tires are flying apart. And everybody is running around looking for the old slick tires like I had. The ironic part about that was my crew chief was Jake Elder. Jake was livid. He said, "You can't win. I had no tools. I had a car, and I had a few tools and a few spare parts that I'd gotten with the car, and that's all I had. I'd gone to Western Auto and bought my tools, my jacks, my jack stands, that cheap stuff like you use in your home garage." So my crew chief's not happy at all. And he's a winning crew chief. He's been around a long time. And he said, "Man, you can't do any good down here like this. You got the wrong tires. Your car's no good. You're wasting your time." He left me here on Saturday afternoon in Happy Hour and went back to the hotel. He was so disgusted. Well, we get in the race, and everybody's having tire trouble, except the guys that have the old tires, like myself, and another guy named James Hilton, who happened to have all old tires, so he couldn't afford new ones. And lo and behold, I'm going along, and all of a sudden, holy cow, I just passed Richard Petty. Man, I just passed David Pearson. I'm passing all these fast cars. I didn't know there was a tire problem. And, you know, our communication wasn't that good at the time. I didn't know there was a tire problem. Then the next thing I thought of was I had this crew chief named Jake Elder, who is notorious for cheating. Well, we raced restrictor plates then, too. I said, uh-oh, I know what's happened. He's left the plate. We've got the wrong plate on this car, or maybe we don't even have a plate on this car, and I'm going to get in big trouble my first race out. That's all I could think about was I was cheating. But as the day wore on, and something happened to my car, the engine in my car, and I fell out of the race after leading a good bit, and I got in the garage, and then I found out, well, the tires were the problem, and we wasn't cheating. And I actually ended up making more money that day selling my tires than I did in the race itself. So I sold all my tires to the teams that were having tire trouble, and I ended up making more money selling used tires than I did what I won in the purse. So that was my introduction into Winston Cup racing, big-time auto racing. Was right here, and it was it was one of those weekends that was just full of things happening, you know, that I was not even aware of or prepared for. But bottom line was, I made the race, I led the race, and I actually had a chance to win the first race I'd ever been to. And that was just about as much encouragement as I needed right there to know that, hey man, this is gonna be good. This is gonna be fun. As a matter of fact, on Saturday night of that weekend, I went back to Nashville and raced at the fairgrounds down there where I was track champion and win every week. I was having to go back home in my early years of first 2 or 3 years of racing. I drive all the way back to Nashville. We didn't have airplanes then. I drive all the way back to Nashville when it was feasible and race on Saturday night to make enough money to be able to race my Winston Cup car on Sunday. So did a lot of travel, a lot of driving around, drove the truck myself, me and Stevie and our little dog Charlie Brown. We'd load the car up, take off down the highway going to Darlington or Martinsville or Charlotte or Daytona, just wherever it was. We loaded everything up and took off. That's how it was in the early years. Yeah, it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that it was that long ago. Because even though as long ago, when you talk about 29, 30 years, whatever it was, so many things have happened in that period of time that it just doesn't seem like you could have done all the things that I've done in that period of time. I know that's a long time ago, but I've done a lot of things in that period of time. And the sport has changed so much in that period of time. And things are so different than they were when we started off. And so it seems like that's another whole era, you know, which it was. That era doesn't exist today. So I have gone through a huge transition from where I started, where the sport was, to where we are today. And that's a huge change in a life. It's kind of like, I think about it, it's like people that were born in the early 1900s that saw cars and then saw airplanes and then saw computers and then saw men on the moon. That's kind of the progression that this sport has taken. Like the cars were not really race cars when we started, and then they became race cars. And now they're guys look like space, they look like astronauts, and they look like they're driving spaceships.
And Darrell Waltrip there does tell some great stories, and we will be hearing a few more of them over the weeks to come. But finally, I just have seen confirmation, Tony Roper, he was 35 and killed from the injury suffered in the Carson track at the Texas O'Reilly 400. So, as I said, the tragedy of NASCAR's 2000 season has continued here late in the season. And I know that tonight at Gateway International, the ASA, the American Speed Association, ran its final race for the season 2000. And Butch Miller, a man we spoke to when we were at Indianapolis and watching the ASA at IRP, has picked up his third win of the season and he did dedicate the win to the Roper family. And whilst he picked up his third win, the championship eventually went to a fellow by the name of Gary Sainamont. And when he spoke to CNN, he was extremely happy about picking up his second championship and the first of the 2000s.
Unfortunately, I watched the tape and said that, you know, you win your first championship and you might be a flash in the pan. Well, we won our second championship, now we've done something, and it feels awful sweet, you know, for this whole API team. Great teamwork all year. Wins, Rain Automotive, GM Goodrich. I mean, it's just been a total team effort. And I'm so happy to be here. Great podium finish for Sears Leeway, and congratulations to Brett Miller on the win.
Yeah, that's Gary Sainamont speaking after his podium finish, second place at the Gateway 200, which was on round of the American Speed Association Championship. And, well, Peter, that's about it from over here. And unfortunately, next week I will be winging it back to you, so it will be my last postcard for America until a fortnight's time when, you'll also have to take some of the other people that I've been fortunate enough to meet in my journeys throughout North America.
Yeah, that's right, Craig. Unfortunately, your hobnobbing with all the stars will come to an end. It was fantastic to hear from Richard Petty and of course, Dale Walter, a fantastic driver, but even a more legendary storyteller. So thank you very much for that, and we look forward to having you back here, and have a great trip back.
Yeah, we look forward to that.
Yeah, Craig Revelle there in the USA. Well, we've been fortunate enough quickly to dive into our sources and come up with some interviews, post-race interviews from up at the Honda Indy up there at Surface Paradise. We're just quickly just keying this up here, ready to bring that to you and quickly get those up for you. And let's see, I've got to find it here. Here we go. Yes, this is the one I'm after. Right. Whoa. He says, well, just sort of happens here, isn't it? And our first up, of course, is our winner from today up there at the Honda Indy 300, Adrian Fernandez.
It's a fantastic feeling. I tell you what, this team never gives up, and we have a tough weekend all trying to get the car set up for the qualifying, and me and my teammate Roberto, we just couldn't get the handle of the car. And this morning we made some changes, and the car felt pretty decent. And I said to John, I think I can race with this car. At the beginning of the race, I had a big moment with Max Pastis where he made a mistake in one of the corners. I was right side by side him, and he squeezed me to the wall where I almost hit him. Apart from that, you just stay out of trouble. The first car incident, and things like that. It wasn't a matter of staying clean and not making any mistakes.
Your team gambled on the last pit stop and kept you out there and said, hey, we can go the distance. The yellows helped you because you were getting pressure from Kenny Brack and gave you enough fuel to hold him off.
Yeah, exactly. If we would have come in, the best we could have called for was for third. So, I mean, the team knew I could do the mileage, and we took a gamble, but it was a measurement gamble because we knew we could do the fuel mileage. Of course, it was going, we have to be defensive to be able to get to the end. But at the end, God smiles on us because those yellows at the end help us big time.
Okay, about Fontana. Again, you were the winner. You got the million last year. The championship's up for grabs. Your team puts a good car into you there. What about it?
I think that's a track that we know how to race well, and we're the defending champion, and everything looks pretty good for us.
It does, and he just got off the phone, by the way, to team owner Pat Patrick, who's back home. Pat making the phone call to him. And Adrian being congratulated by his long-time FedEx Championship Series owner.
And, of course, second place name, Kenny Brack, and this is what he had to say after the race.
No, it was one of the things, he got in front of us somehow, and during the pit sequence, I guess, somehow, and, I tried a few times to really push him, but couldn't make him into a mistake or anything, so I had to settle for second.
How wild was it out there? This looked like a figure eight race.
It was pretty tough in the resource, I'd say. I mean, it was pretty tight there for a while. But it was very interesting. I want to thank my team because they gave me a very good car today.
Yeah, Kenny Brack, obviously very happy with that second place in today's Honda Indy 300.
Now, Peter, that about wraps us up this week. That's all the time we've got. We'll have results next weekend from the San Remo Rally. I think the two, Michael Guest, the Australian rally driver, who's driving in behind our excellent World Rally Car. This is his World Rally Car Timac debut, and we're no doubt probably looking very carefully to see how Michael goes in that event.
Yes, it'll be interesting. He's always one that provides plenty of excitement, and we're all wishing him well on his World Rally campaign over there.
Yep. Of course, then his event, his next event, after will be the Telstra Rally Australia in Perth in November, so it's going to be looking really good. That's all from us this week inside Motorsport. We'll be back with people next week. Good luck to Sandy and Peter. People may not know, Sandy is Peter's wife, and they're expecting their first. Fingers crossed everything goes right here this coming week. So if we don't hear you next week, we'll know where you are.
That's right. It's pretty exciting and scary time. So, yeah, fingers crossed. Thanks for that.
That's all from us this week inside Motorsport. We'll be back again next week with all the latest news of what's happening around the world in motorsport.
Winner double pass to the Melbourne Cup, return airfares, accommodation, grandstand tickets.
Wow!
Like putting unlucky betting tickets, $10 or more board at the end.
1-800-246-868. Call now. 1-800-246-868.
Around Australia is Inside Motorsport.
And good evening once again for another edition of Inside Motorsport this week. Colin Ford with Lion Solo. Peter Milton obviously not here this week. Hopefully some good news for him and his wife Sandy regarding their expected new arrival in the family during the week. So hopefully things have all gone well there. Anyhow, the motorsport this weekend, it's all over the place. Primarily the final round of the 2000 season for the Formula One World Championship. As we know, the Drivers' Championship has been well and truly won by Michael Schumacher. It's down to the wire for the Manufacturers' Championship, though. All required is a fourth place by Ferrari to steal the championship for them. Now, if either of the Ferraris fail to finish or finish lower than fourth, and the two McLarens finish first and second, well, they're still in it with a show. As well, there's, of course, the opportunity for Michael Schumacher, possibly, to give Rubens Barrichello a thank-you victory if the situation arises. But, however, Rubens Barrichello was down here in Australia last week for the Honda Indy 300 at Surfers Paradise. He apparently has got a head cold. No doubt the usual trick, long-distance travel on jets, air conditioning and so on, and gone up to see Pang in Malaysia, and he's got a head cold. So not the best condition for him, but anyhow, Michael Schumacher, as always, he's on pole, and the following report from Jonathan Ledyard of the BBC laid out the situation.
As if a public reprimand from the FIA president Max Mosley wasn't enough to upset Ron Dennis, his McLaren drivers then found themselves second best to Michael Schumacher for the fourth qualifying session in a row. What's more, Schumacher's ninth pole of the year 2000 was almost half a second quicker than Hakkinen. And until the final moments, Ferrari occupied both front row positions, just like they did last year. In the end, though, Rubens Barrichello, battling flu as well as McLaren, lost out to both Hakkinen and David Coulthard. He eventually slipped to fourth. Alexander Wurtz's Benetton was next best, more than a second slower than Schumacher. Jacques Villeneuve was sixth. But Jenson Button's good run faltered after morning mechanical troubles. He came in 16th, eight places down on his Williams teammate Ralf Schumacher.
Yeah, things not going so well there for Jenson Button. They mentioned Jenson Button. Jonathan Ledyard of the BBC was actually able to get hold of Jenson before the event and has a little word to him about how he expects things to go at the Malaysian Grand Prix, and also in relation to his move away from Williams at the end of the season to go and join the resurgent Benetton Williams Racing. And this is what Jenson Button had to say to Jonathan Ledyard.
So you're going to end on a high then, are you? Podium finish, maybe a win.
It looks that way, doesn't it? I mean, the newspapers. Well, it would be nice, definitely. I think a podium finish is what I need. Not to be on the podium to overtake Jack. I really want to beat Jack in the championship this year. That's what I'm going to be aiming for. So I mean, the third or a fourth, isn't it?
So why do you want? Why especially Jack? What's the needle between the two of you, or the joke between the two of you?
No, there isn't. I don't think I should get on with him quite well, and be nice to beat world champion, wouldn't it? But it's going to be tough. I think finish third or fourth here, but We'll see.
And you say you need to finish on a podium. Is that something just to satisfy yourself, or are you just thinking about other things as well?
No, it's over to Zach. He's 7th then. I like that.
Have you told him that?
No, I will though. I will today or tomorrow if I see him at all. So now I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great. It's obviously going to be a new experience. But from what I've seen, the circuit looks really good. Really looking forward to it. It's quite a flowing circuit, so it's going to be good for the car, I think.
And what about working with Williams for the last time? What's it for a few years yet? What does that mean? What's that going to be like?
It's going to be a bit sad on Sunday, obviously, after the race. But I think if we have a good result, it'll make it pretty special, I think, my last race with Williams. But even if we don't have a good result, it's going to be... We'll still have a big celebration because it's been a great year this year for myself and Ralph and for the whole team. So, looking forward to the Christmas party, because we have a big Christmas party at Williams, so it should be good fun.
Looking back, I mean, what have been the highlights of your first year in Formula One?
Every race. The last 16 races. Racing a Formula One car.
Spa?
Yeah, Spa, definitely qualifying. And also Japan. Having good qualifying and actually finishing in the points. Because I've had some good qualifying lately, but I've had excellence in the races or something. So it's good to actually get both. Qualifying in the race,
but also not only qualifying, well, you've actually beaten your teammate. So was that something that you envisaged at the start of the year? Do you think you'd have the beating of him?
No, definitely not. I thought I'd be close by the end of the year, or just a bit behind in my first year, but I didn't think I'd out qualify him.
Because you made almost something of a habit of it, haven't you, really? It's like 6 times, I think, out of 16 races, which is a decent return.
3 in the last 4, I think it is. But it's good. It is a nice feeling, obviously, when you're in front of your teammate. But then again, he's been in front of me more times than I've been in front of him this year. So it happens. Sometimes you're quicker, sometimes your teammate's quicker. But hopefully next year, me and Giancarlo can work together and do the same sort of thing as I've done this year with Ralph. Had a good relationship.
Looking ahead to next year, then, I mean, even though we haven't yet finished this one, how easy is it going to be to keep... for Benetton to beat Williams, do you think, or stay up there? Just listen to the press conference, all of Hakkinen, Coulthard, Schumacher, all rate that Williams are going to be up there, Ralph Schumacher. No one mentioned Benetton. What do you say to that?
Well, I think it's good for us, because no one expects too much. Like the same with Williams this year. So it's going to be difficult, obviously, Renault the first year back properly. But I think it's a pretty good package, and obviously I haven't tested the car yet, so I don't know what it's going to be like, but I think it's going to be okay.
But it's not going to be a disappointment after this year, after the success you've had?
No, I don't think so, because you always know what to expect, and the only person you can really judge yourself on is your teammate anyway, so I don't think it'll be a disappointment.
But overall this year has exceeded all your expectations. You've done far better. I mean, you said already you didn't really expect to beat Ralph Schumacher.
Yeah, definitely, in that respect, and being third at Spa as well was a bit shocking. I didn't think I'd be there, and also Suzuka as well, and it's great because I feel so much more, I don't know, together with the car now, and I can really play with it a lot more. Before, if I had a lot of oversteer, I would lift off, but now in qualifying I just keep it fully lit, and it's so much easier now. It's so much more in control. Obviously I can set the car up now to the way I like to drive it, before I went Ralph's direction more than anything. So that's definitely helped. When I feel so much more confident now. So race by race, just takes me. I just can't wait to get to the next one all the time. More experience.
So how much is that going to help next year? The fact you know where you're going, you know the circuits and so on, you have this confidence, despite the fact it'll be a new team.
Definitely will help. Definitely. And I think working with Giancarlo is going to be good as well. He's very quick. And I can't see why we can't have a good year next year. I think they've put quite a bit of effort into the team for next year. Work more on next year. I'm looking forward to it.
Good enough to challenge Ferrari and McLaren even?
I wouldn't know. I don't know, but I shouldn't think so next year. But I'm sure in the future. It's more of a learning year, I think, again, for the team with the Renault engine. But I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, Jenson Button there talking with Jonathan Legend from the BBC. And of course, the Norwegian Grand Prix is the final round. The grid, full good positions as they were. Michael Schumacher's on pole in stride from Mika Häkkinen and David Coulthard, sitting in front of the grid, and then McLaren's and Rubens Barrichello, Chris Ferrari 4th. Alexander Wurz from the Benetton was 5th. Jacques Villeneuve from Canada in the BAR 6th. Eddie Irvine, the Jaguar 7 Pro, one of their best showings for the year. Ralph Schumacher 8 in the first of the Williams BMWs. Yano Trulli in the Jordan Honda, he was 9th. Heinz Harald Frentzen in the second of the Jordan Hondas, he was 10th. Zonta, he was 11th in the BRR, he was actually quickest in this morning's warm-up. Johnny Herbert was 12th in his Jaguar, and his final race for them. 13th, Gene Carlo Fisichella for the Benetton. 14th, Pedro De La Rosa in the Arrows. 15th, Josh Verstappen in the Arrows. 16th, Jenson Button in the Williams. 17th, Mika Salo Sauber. 18th, Jean Lacy Prost. 19th, Nick Heidfeld Prost. 20th, Pedro De La Sauber. 21st, Marc Jean for Minardi. And 22nd, Gaston Mazacan for second of Minardi's. Now, the Malaysian Grand Prix has just started, and actually started late. They had a problem at the start. Initially, there was some suggestions that Mika Hakkinen had jumped the start, and there was an accident at the back of the field just on the opening start of the race, which did cause problems for De La Rosa in the Arrows, and I believe one of the Saubers as well. Trulli had to come into the pits for a new nose cone for his car, and at the end of what was the third lap, it was David Coulthard, who was leading by 1.6 seconds over the pairing of Schumacher and Barrichello. Hakkinen, having dropped back down to fourth, obviously may have had some problems there, and things not looking quite interesting at that point again. Now, as we say, it's only just started, and what we'll try and do is keep you posted throughout the show in terms of what is happening with that race up there at Sepang in Malaysia. As we say, could be interesting for Barrichello, could be opportunity, if things work out right there, for Schumacher to give Rubens a thank you win, something that's happened in the past, as we are well aware. The other motorsport taking place this weekend is the San Remo Rally over in Italy. Richard Burns had made his return to rallying for the event, and we now cross to Greg Strange from the BBC for his report on the Rally San Remo as it stood up to close of business yesterday.
Peugeot say they are considering a stage-managed finish to the San Remo Rally, which would give Marcus Gronholm a huge lead in the Drivers' Championship. His teammates Gilles Panizzi and François Delacour are 1 and 2, with Gronholm 4. If he can overtake third-place Tommy Mäkinen on the first of today's two final stages, Panizzi and Delacour may be ordered to move over and give Gronholm victory. That would take him to 56 points in the Drivers' Championship, 12 points clear of Richard Burns and 13 points ahead of Colin McRae and Carlos Sainz, with just two rounds of the championship left. Peugeot would still score a maximum 16 points in the Manufacturers' Challenge to take them ahead of Ford. Some would call it cynical, but it would be a devastating tactical move in both championships. First, though, Gronholm has to overtake Mäkinen.
Yeah, once again, things pretty interesting in what is a very interesting tarmac rally again. As it is, Richard Burns, who is one of the leading titans for Subaru, he crashed out, went off towards the end of the 37.74 kilometre Monte Sepu run, and he had the fastest split time on stage, but he understeered into a slow corner and hit a rock and a small tree. The impact apparently damaged the engine cooling system, and the engine gradually overheated. They then had no water at the end of the road section. There were fumes in the car at the end. So basically now Burns has to go to the remaining two rallies, Australia and Great Britain, and win, and hope that his main title opponents, which are both Gronholm and similar, have major problems. Carlos Sainz, he's seen 11.9 seconds back in fifth position, and Colin McRae, he's driving his pictures and a plate in his face after his crash at the Tour of Corsica 3 weeks ago. Apparently still in a bit of pain. He's some ways back. The leading positions at the end of the second day of San Remo Rally, that's not due to recommence probably for another hour Australian time. Gilles Pinguy is leading his Peugeot with François Delacour and second to Peugeot, 21.4 seconds behind him. Tony Mäkinen, actually probably one of his better showings this year. He's in Mitsubishi in third, 58.5 seconds behind. Marcus Gronholm, in the third of the Peugeots, leading point scoring championship. He's in his Peugeot 1 minute behind. Then there's Carlos Sainz at 1 minute 12. Colin McRae in sixth at 1 minute 0.41. Seventh is Jean-Joseph, Simon Jean-Joseph, driving on the Subaru, 1 minute 55. Dennis Freddie Lloyd in second, and Mitsubishi is 2 minutes 23. Fairway back there. Then Peter Solberg in another February is 2 minutes and 33 seconds. Then Sebastian Loeb in one of the privateer Toyota Corolla World Rally Cars, 3 minutes and 23 further back. Australia's Michael Guest, he crashed out on day one. Came a little bit wide on a corner, coming out of a tunnel, clipped a rock on the outside of the circuit, of the road, happened to catch the steering at a bad angle, broke the steering, and that was all that wrote for him. Also, unfortunately, this rally has also been marred by bad accidents and problems, including the death of a policeman who was involved in spectator control on the first day of the rally, which is something very, very sad to hear, and that there'll be some inquiries into what happened there. That's what's happening overseas. We'll try and keep you updated with what's happening with the Formula 1 as we go along. But things are happening elsewhere around Australia. Nothing much really this weekend here in Australia. We've got the sort of a bit of a gap between last weekend with the Honda Indy 300 and our next major event. But next weekend, motor racing comes to Wakefield Park near Queanbeyan, near Golden, sorry, not that far at all from Canberra, where Inside Motorsport is broadcast from. And it is the first round of the summer series rounds of the BOC Gas's Australian Super Touring Championship. And the man who's currently leading that championship is Paul Morris. And we had this opportunity just a little bit earlier this afternoon to talk to Paul and see what he had to say about his potential chances with the championship moves to Wakefield Park, and also a little bit about what's been happening with him recently. Next weekend, the BOC Gas's Australian Super Touring Championship moves to Wakefield Park, and the man who will be looking to try and keep his perfect record intact is Paul Morris. Paul, a new circuit somewhere for the first time. You must be so excited about the challenges presented by this new circuit.
Yeah, it's going to be great at a level of the playing field in a bit, because no one's really been there before, and we have a lot of information to rely on from the years we've been running the BMW, so it's going to be challenging. It's going to be good fun.
Mm. In terms of looking at the Wakefield Park, have you actually ever been there at all or not?
No, I've never been there at all, and sort of really don't know what to expect until we sort of get there and check it out.
Mm. In terms of your plans for going there, do you have, and yourself and the team, have in mind potentially that it might be similar to, say, short course at Iron Park, or use that as your starting point to work from?
Yeah, from what we've spoken to people, and obviously we've had a look at the layout on paper and tried to guesstimate the best we can, but you can do all that all you want, and until you get there and actually cut a few laps, you really, really, really can't tell.
Mm. Well, they say the track is fairly tight, and a number of and overtaking opportunities are going to be fairly limited, so no doubt pole position is going to be and front row position is going to be all important.
Yeah, no, it always is, and probably a little bit more there. But it's always important, and we'll just have to go there and see what we can do, I suppose.
Mm. Now, at this stage, you're well and truly leading the championship, but you've got people like John Henderson, like, who have been snapping on your heels, and this is probably the first opportunity they'll have to really mount a really hard challenge, too, because of the fact it is a new circuit, and they've had that long break between the last round and this round to get themselves all in order.
Yeah, I think a few of them have been down there testing as well, which we really haven't had the opportunity because we've been busy with the V8 supercar as well. So I think it's probably the other team's best chance to get up there and have a win.
Mm. And any changes to the BMW service meeting at all?
No, she's just sort of was prepped, ready to go. It's just been sitting idle, waiting to make a move. So no real changes at all.
Mm. And probably not out the fact that you know, the summer season, it's going to be some good racing all around.
Yeah, hopefully, the weather's a bit warmer and we can get some people out there to enjoy the racing that normally wouldn't come. And I know the people at Goulburn are really excited about the event, so I'm really looking forward to getting down there.
Mm. Yeah, from all reports, like from where we are here in Canberra, you know, the region is actually going to have a fairly good turnout for the race meeting to support Wakefield Park.
Yeah, which is great. I don't know what they normally do in Goulburn for fun, but they'll have something great to do next weekend.
Any thoughts about setting a new speed record down the main street of Goulburn at all?
I don't know about that, mate. I think we'll be doing that.
Yeah. No, especially, I believe they've got a couple of promotional events on plan to sort of help get the program up and running there at Wakefield Park, so that's another thing you can talk them into.
Yeah, it could be a chance. Could the BMW run down the main drag?
Mm.
Now, Paul, last time I saw you, you were at Oran Park, and you were in pretty dire straits after a very, very hefty crash in the big Kev Racing Commodore. How have you healed up since then?
Physically I'm fine. Just my back's still a little bit numb, and I get a little bit of pain from it every now and again, but when I'm in the race car, it doesn't affect me whatsoever. So the only real main problem is I haven't been able to do much fitness training for a few months, and I've just started to get back into that now and getting on top of that, and hopefully I'll be in good shape for that.
Mm. Now, last weekend you had a run at the Honda Indy 300. I noticed, I think it was in the last race, you finished third up, or you were in the top 10 there?
Yeah, we didn't run our VT, we just ran our VS there, and whacked the wall second lap on Thursday and missed all the practice that day, and by sort of Sunday afternoon the car was quite good and capitalised on a few other guys' mistakes and finished up in the top 10, so we were pretty happy with that, and it was good fun.
Mm. And now currently you're doing some testing with the VT, getting ready for Bathurst?
Yeah, we're up at Queensland Raceway on Tuesday, and at the moment I've got Matt Neal out here with me, who's driving with me at Bathurst in the big Kev races, so we'll get him in the car and get him some miles.
Mm. Now that you'll be showing Matt around some of the sites up there in Queensland on the Gold Coast?
Yeah, he's been asleep for about a day and a half, so I'm just trying to wake him up now, actually, but yeah, we've had a bit of a look around.
Mm. And of course that's one of our interesting parts for you too, is getting the big, tall, lanky gentleman there, Matt Neal, in the car as well as yourself.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's going to be a problem. We've already been out to the workshop and sat in the car and worked on what we have to do, so as far as seating position goes, it's fine, and just a little bit of adjustment in the position of the steering wheel, which we think we can accomplish quite easy, so it's not going to be a hindrance at all.
Mm. And the thing is too that he has run quite a few laps around Bathurst there in 97 and 98.
Exactly right, and he raced hard in the mission there against the Volvo, and virtually nearly won the race, and that's what you need around Bathurst, somebody who can get in the car and knows their way around the track and can race hard all day, and that's why we're going for Matt, because we know we can do the job.
I think, of course, the thing is too, the fact that he, in that race in 98, is up against two of the hard men of motorsport, Richard Rydell and the wily old man himself, Jim Richards, who I know you've gone head-to-head with many a time, and to come out just behind them by mere fractions of a second over 1,000 kilometres is not bad at all.
Yeah, and, the fierce competition in the British Touring Car Championship, which we all know is pretty hectic, and Matt more than holds his own there as well, so can't wait to get in the car with him. I think it's going to be great.
I think probably if you looked at your driver pairing in terms of, say, the independence end of the field there, that is outside the main factory teams, you probably have one of the drivers, strongest driver pairings between Matt and yourself.
Yeah, we do, and even though we haven't got the experience in the V8 supercars, and you look at my time around the mountain and Matt's and results in the super touring, and we can just get a little bit more speed out of the Commodore, there's no reason why we can't come home with a great finish up there.
Mm. So Paul, we look forward to seeing you first of all next weekend at Wakefield Park, and then in a few weeks time up at the mountain.
Alright, it'll be good.
Thank you much, Paul Morris.
See ya.
Yeah, Paul Morris there, as you can hear, things were rather noisy in the background. He had a whole crew of people there, and also had Matt Neal there with him, amongst other people, and as you said, they'll be testing next Tuesday at Queensland Raceway, and possibly Matt will be up at Wakefield Park to observe the Australian BAC Gases, Australian Super Touring Championship. Yeah, I should just probably dust off your second BMW and invite Matt to have a go with it. That had a bit of interest to the championship. I'm sure I probably wouldn't mind that. In terms of news of things happening around the tracks, one of the interesting things this week is the talk, again, Craig Lowndes, what happens next. The talk being that he may be possibly involved with a satellite team for HRT. Of course, nothing really being firmed up at this stage, and I'd say that'll be one of those things that will take its time to be fully known over the next few weeks, so it's going to be interesting stuff there. Of course, no doubt as well, for a lot of teams that were at the circus, Honda Indy 300 last weekend with the V8 sport races there,
a bit of repair work to be done. The Kmart Wins Racing team, they've got two cars requiring repairs. Car 17 for Stephen Johnson, it needs repairs. Stephen Ory's car requires repairs. Larry Perkins' Bathurst car, it needs repairs. Garth Tander, his car, Bathurst car, needs repairs. Paul Wheel, his AU Falcon, it needs repairs. Brad Jones, his AU Falcon, it needs repairs. I tell you what, there's a few guys who are wishing that they didn't have to race at Honda Indy until after Bathurst. There's a hell of a lot of repair work having to be done on cars, and that's going to make it very interesting there. The other interesting news this week is the fact that the testing that has been done recently by Tiga between the AU Falcons and VT Commodore Aero packages has found that the Ford definitely develops significantly less front downforce than Holden, but develops a lot more rear downforce, actually 50 kilograms more rear downforce than the Commodore. So the idea is that it's light on front, heavy at the back, whereas the Commodore is a bit more balanced across the downforce front to rear. So obviously, the Commodore actually apparently has 84 kilograms more front downforce. So that's very, very interesting. That's much more engaging under tray. So, of course, they get to run out of battle, so that's going to make it all good fun and games, as they say. But other news this week, the fact that one of the people who will be running in the Auto Pro team, Jeff Braddon, well known around the traps, he'll be joining Cameron McConville, and we expect that things will be looking good there for Cameron. Other team driver there, Rod Nash, he'll be teaming up with Paul Dundrell, one of the young up and comers, but it'd be very, very good to see Cameron do well. It's been a while since he's had a bit of luck there, and the name of the game, of course, is that he's looking forward to that event and running with a man who he previously has run with as a against in the Super Touring Championship in terms of Jeff Braddon. So it's going to be all fun and games, as they say, for the people running with the races coming up. Now, next weekend, we have the... I got hold of somebody there, and unfortunately, didn't work the way we wanted, so we'll see if we can try and get them again. And we're actually just trying to get hold of Mike Porter from the BRC Gas as a Transit Train Championship, and hopefully we can get hold of Mike in just a second now.
Hello, Mike Porter.
Yeah, Mike. Hello, it's audio from Inside Motorsport.
Hello.
Hello, Mike. Come on forward.
Yeah, mate.
Are you ready to go this now?
I've just got some got five sheets more to go through on the photocopier.
No, I'll just give you a call back in a few minutes time.
No. Yeah? Hey, we're talking like 5 seconds.
Okay, 5 seconds. Well, how's it all going up there, Mike? What's the weather like in Queensland?
We're not on air yet, are we?
Oh, yeah, we're on air.
Okay, no problem.
How's the weather up there?
The weather's overcast.
Overcast.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's what it's going to make it a little bit different than what it was. And did you get up just to have a look at the 300 last weekend?
Yes, I actually live on the circuit, so...
Oh, did you ride in the middle of things?
I didn't really, yeah, I had no choice in the matter. We had Michael Andretti fly past with flames coming out of the back of his car, so that was all pretty entertaining.
That's sort of different. And it's a really great festival sort of feeling up there for the Honda Indy 300.
It is.
Yeah. Being right on top of the circuit, it always makes it, you get all the noise and everything.
Yes, you certainly do. And you also have your life completely disrupted for about 2 months, but never mind.
Yeah. That's one of those little things that, I suppose, is a strong point or a bad point for where you live?
It's just something we have to put up with, I guess.
Just put up with it.
Yeah.
But of course, now that you're still going to get a change of climate heading down south for next week, of course, to come down to Wakefield Park and that's one of the BRC Gas Super Touring Championship.
Yeah, that's basically the start of a whole new era in the championship. As you know, the championship started in 1994 and has been held predominantly in the winter, as have all touring car championships in Australia. And this is the start of our summer season. The first three rounds of the championship were held in winter, two at Oran Park and one at Lakeside. And Wakefield Park, it's the first time we've been there, it's the first time Wakefield Park's held a major championship, national championship event. And it's the start of our new summer season, and which there'll be five rounds, all to be televised in a daytime television time slot. on Channel 7 on Sunday afternoon. So basically before when we ran in winter, we had problems with the television time slot. The 7 network's heavily committed to AFL and also had the Olympics. So we were on with a late night time slot, but by going to summer we now have a daytime television time slot, which is much better for sponsors and fans as well.
Because it's still been trying to get it, remember it's 11 o'clock at night to sort of either get yourself out of, stay awake, or either get back out of bed or set the video recorder to do the right thing.
Yeah, that's true, but this will be much better now, so that won't be a problem. And in future, yes, the entire championship will be held in summer, and so we'll have daytime television for every round.
That's going to be a real big improvement for the championship, because I think it probably has suffered in terms of one, the winter weather sometimes making things not particularly pleasant out at some of the circuits, but also up against, as you say, all those football codes that are running at the same time of year.
Well, it's just a day. It's not a question of running against the football codes. It's a question that Channel 7 is the telecaster for AFL. I mean, Channel 10, for example, they can show the V8s on a Sunday afternoon because they don't have, they're not committed to any football codes. Channel 9 has rugby league. Channel 7 has AFL. So obviously they're big money earners for both those networks, and if you want to be on at the same time of the year as those sports, well then you have to play second fiddle in terms of television time slots. But by moving to summer, that ceases to be a problem, and as I say, it's much better commercially and also for the fans.
Now of course this is the first time that the Super Team guys have been to Wakefield Park, and probably here the guys have been out and they've been testing not only just in their super tours, but in the case of David Auger, he's out in a future tour in a road car.
Yeah, actually Tony Newman was the first one to go down there. He went down there I think the last week of September, and he did a couple of days. Very good. We had both Wynn and Prime from Canberra went down there, and plus the Canberra Times and the Goulburn Post, so fantastic media support. Tony tested for a couple of days, and then in the past week, yeah, we had David Auger. Just wanted to get a feel for the track with his, he drove a road car and did a few laps in the future tour. And the following day, last Tuesday, Paul Liebeder was there with his Hyundai Elantra, and also Jamie Miller's tested there as well in the Toyota Camry. So there's been four drivers out on the circuit. All of them have, well, in the case of Paul Liebeder, Paul had raced there before in an HQ Holden. And he said the track is, the way they've revised it, they've widened it, improved the pit lane facilities, and he said there's a lot more passing opportunities, and also it's, they've changed a couple of corners, which has sort of made the circuit a fair bit quicker.
Now, it's interesting to see Jamie Miller back, because I know last time I talked to him was just after the previous round at Owen Park, where he'd had that accident where the Camry got hit in the rear and folded the rear wheel and suspension up under it, and he was a bit about funding to be able to get out again and show what he could really do in that Camry.
Yeah, that's Jamie will be back for sure. He, I guess he's found some additional sponsorship funding, which is great news, and he'll be running at Wakefield Park. It's pretty, he would be expected to finish in the top 10 for sure. Also, we've got a new a competitor from Canberra, Matthew Fox. He's going to be driving one of Malcolm Ray's Toyota Carinas. He's going to be making his championship debut at Wakefield Park. He's had done quite a lot of racing there as well in HQs and various other smaller categories. So that'll add something to the championship, and there's an extra car out there. At this stage, it looks like we're going to have 18 to 19 super touring cars and 9 or 10 future tourers. So for the main feature races is 28 laps, of which there'll be two. Talking around about 27, 28 cars, which would be probably our biggest grid in a couple of years.
That's actually things picking up quite well, and it's good to see the fact that, I suppose, again, it's one of those factors that people have now got, money is becoming a bit more available after the Olympics and everything else. People are looking for sponsorship, and it's opened things up a bit, and it's good to see the guys out there with the cars on the circuit.
Well, that's true, and, there's some really interesting things happening too in the championship. I mean, you've got David Auger, who's third in the Independence Cup. He's locked in Paul Morris has obviously been running away with the championship. He's unbeaten, but at the moment he's got 110 points, but you've got Alan Gurr on 60, David Auger on 58, and John Henderson on 52, all locked in a very close battle for second position. And all those guys are also gunning to be the first the first man to knock off Paul Morris, and John Henderson, who's finished second in five of the seven races so far this year, whilst he's not second in the championship, he's probably consistently been Paul's closest rival, and he's really pushed the BMW, had quite a few of the tracks, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes. Paul Morris is actually not arriving at the circuit until Friday night. He's going to miss Friday practice because of business commitments. He's going to be a little bit behind the eight ball, so this could be John Henderson's opportunity, if not Alan Gers.
That's right. We were talking with Paul a bit earlier on. He's actually testing up in Queensland Raceway with Matt Neal, the leading independent from the British Championship. He's over here testing on the Tuesday, so that's obviously a bit of a problem when you've got limited time to test for Bathurst coming up later in the year, but also with his two sets of commitments, obviously make it very difficult to be in two places at once.
That's true, yeah. I mean, he's taking on a very big program, probably the biggest program of anybody in Australia this year, and you know, it's something like, well, there's eight rounds of the Super Series Championship and 15 or 16 V8 races, so that's like 23 weeks of racing, so basically you spread that out over 12 months. It's sort of once every 2 weeks, and they've had a couple of accidents with their V8 car, so at Oran Park and whatever, so when you've got to do a major rebuild like that, it really does slow you up.
Well, I think it's actually probably going to be a very, very top line meeting there. Like the Pagano, it's actually on the local television here in Canberra. They've started promoting the event quite heavily on the local Prime network, which is the Seven network, covering, giving coverage about the fact that the races are on and how much it's costing. So it looks like they're putting a really good package together for families and get families and people along there, children under 16 free, sort of a fun fair for children, all that type of stuff, and a really good support program in terms of the various categories they're supporting. And so I'd say in terms of bringing Super Touring to sort of regional New South Wales away from Sydney for the first time, this is a meeting I think probably people support it should bode well for the future.
Yeah, well, New South Wales has traditionally been the headquarters of Super Touring. We've always had good crowd support at Oran Park and also at Amaru over the years, and Eastern Creek, and a large majority of our competitors are based in New South Wales. And sure, I mean, I think the message we're getting from Goulburn is that they're just delighted that they've got a national championship event of any sport there. In this case, it's motor racing. And I think the local residents are starting to realise that Wakefield Park can be a real asset to the local community in terms of attracting high-profile sporting events, and also which tips dollars into the town, because all the teams, when they go there, they stay at hotels and eat in restaurants and hire cars and all those sorts of things. So the local media and also Goulburn Tourism have been right behind it, and they've been very supportive, and also the Canberra media have been extremely supportive. So it's really shaping together as quite a positive situation, and we think that it's going to be a big success, and it's just the perfect way to kick off our new summer series, and I'm sure that we're going to be back there in following years.
Well, Mark, we'll be up there next weekend, definitely covering the race and that Wakefield Park, and including reports for our program, user program on the Sunday.
Yep.
So we look forward to seeing you up there and catching with all the drivers next weekend at Wakefield Park.
No problem. There's a full, I think there's 12, 13 races on Sunday. Lots of support events. There's the Mirages, there's the Daewoo One Make Series, there's Commodore Cup, production sports cars, street sedans. So and the future tour is in with the super tourers. So I think it's a pretty varied and an interesting program. And for those who are really interested or really keen, Friday practice starts at midday, and there'll be qualifying on Saturday. That starts first qualifying session for the super tourers and future tourers starts just after 11 o'clock. So the qualifying's quite an interesting spectacle, because the guys are actually right on the limit for those all-important grid positions, because, if you want to beat Paul Morris, the best way to do it is to qualify on the front row. And whilst Paul's been qualifying on the front row, there's been certainly a lot of competition to try and get that other front row position to start alongside him.
And that's the opportunity too, I suppose, is that if there are a couple other guys who can maybe take advantage of Paul not practicing on the Friday, and not qualifying, so I thought actually lock him out for the first time from the front row, it means that you could actually get a couple of people in front of Paul for a change.
Well, I mean, that's for sure, and that's, it's going to be really interesting, I think, the first qualifying session. There is a practice session before the first qualifying session, but having said that, Paul's certainly going to be short of track time, so they're going to have to sort of be just... I wouldn't be at all surprised if we don't see the BMW, you know, at full sort of speed until perhaps halfway through the second qualifying session.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Mike Porter.
Not a problem. Look forward to seeing you next weekend.
We'll catch you around.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yeah, Mike Porter there from the BOC Gases Australian Super Touring Championship. Yeah, let's look a little bit further afield in terms of things that are going on in other parts of Australia. And we now go to join our man in South Australia. And things are starting to happen down south in Adelaide. And joining us once again is our Adelaide correspondent, Dave Langfield. Dave, things are really starting to hot up down there in South Australia, particularly starting next weekend.
Yeah, that's right, Colin. This next weekend sees the fourth running of the popular Classic Adelaide Rally, which gets underway this Thursday, the 26th of October. The events run over 4 days and takes in areas of the Mount Lofty Ranges and the beautiful Fourier Peninsula. Starting and finishing each day at the luxurious Hilton Hotel in the city, competitors will cover approximately 1,000 kilometres, and that contains 33 special stages totalling 233 competitive kilometres. Eligible cars were built before 1970 and the event is run wholly on the tarmac roads. Last year there were a record 137 entrants, and that figure has been surpassed with 151 for the 2000 Classic, and that represents a 10% increase in the field, so this event is certainly growing in popularity each year. The competitors are split into three categories, and that's the competition rally, which the vehicles contain full safety gear, and it's on to the second over the 33 special stages. These sort of cars are Ford Escorts, Capris, GT1000s, Porsche 911s and Mark II Jaguars, just to name a few. Then we come to the touring category, which is mainly restored thoroughbred and classic cars, and they're not actually competing for outright honours. They're led by this year by touring car legend Norm Beachy in a 1967 Camaro. And that's got double the entries this year at 40 cars. We had 20 last year, so that's showing an immense increase in popularity. And the first, probably my favourite, the parade cars, is the exotic sports and classic cars, mainly from overseas, and including vehicles like the Ferrari California Spider, and that's valued at approximately $3 million. And it's weird that we've got approximately like $30 million worth of cars going to be sitting in the Hilton garage at any one time. And that will be led, the parade will be led by Sir Jack Bradman, and also will feature Triple British Touring Car Champion and Bathurst winner Wyn Percy in a red Mark II Jaguar. We don't have the final entry list as yet. I was trying to get that hold of that Friday night, but ran out of time. But we do know that Classic Adelaide regular Andrew Medici, and obviously touring car star of the past, has been replaced by Peter Gazzard in car number 4 of Southland GT. Normally Andrew pumps that round quite nicely. Unfortunately, we also won't be seeing the promised 1952 Mercedes 300 SL Gullwing, a beautiful vehicle which is to be driven by the Daimler-Benz public affairs manager, Dieter Ritter, and he's been out here a couple of times in the past. And brought some beautiful cars from the from Mercedes Museum. The vehicle was actually damaged recently while being driven by the great John Surtees, former Formula One and motorcycle champion. Apparently it wasn't John's fault. Apparently one of the Gullwing doors was open and a gust of wind caught it and damaged the panel, so Mercedes factory said, or the museum said, no, we're not sending that one. So the local Mercedes dealer BEA Motors actually sourced a 190 SL for Ritter to come out and drive, but he's decided not to come this time. Last year we saw a titanic battle between the 1998 winner Andrew Cavalli in his Ford Escort and Rick Bates in a Porsche 911, with Bates taking control after the Cavalli crashed heavily on day 3, Bates going on to win the rally. This year promises to be even better, with bigger entries and a number of new special stages, and we're looking at one that we're obviously not allowed to call it to climb to the Eagle, but that's a reenactment of the Eagle on the Hill climb, which was always done on the Friday of the Grand Prix here in Adelaide, while we had it for 11 years, up the old Mount Barker area, which now has been, due to major works on that road, has made it a lot safer, and Devil's Elbow side of the scene of many a truck rollover, so the government's done a lot of work there to get that road safe, but they've actually got the old section, which is a really good windy twisty road, and they're going to run a rally stage on it, so that promises to be great. I'll be following the event from Friday onwards, and we'll bring you the results next Sunday afternoon from the finish.
Right, and of course, as always, that event has produced some interesting driver, navigator and vehicle pairings, but also some interesting stories in terms of, you know, cars that have come the longest distance, cars that have got particular histories attached to them. That's why something to look forward to.
Yeah, a lot of big names, as so Jack Brabham, obviously needs no introduction. Wynn Kirby last year, I think, was in a Cobra replica, and he was having an absolute ball until, I think, something in the radiator split or something like that on, I think, day two, but he was dead keen to come back again. Guys like Solar Century's Glenn Ridge, I think he drove for two of the days last year. I think somebody substituted him for the first two, and he picked up from day three onwards, and I know he's done previous events, and he just loves it.
Mm. It's one of those sort of events that does have that mix of the classic old-style race, similar in some aspects to like Targa Tasmania, not as intensive, but again, taking that beautiful countryside that surrounds Adelaide, and which is well-known to people from the past in the Formula 1 Grand Prix, and also more recently, the Eclipse of 500.
Well, that's right, and of course, onwards from that is the Le Mans, American Le Mans Series race we're looking at for the New Year's Eve party here in Adelaide.
Yeah, because that's going to be one of the really big things coming up at the end of the year is the race of 1,000 years, the American Le Mans Series race, and no doubt Adelaide is sort of starting to feel a little bit of a bug for that as well.
Oh, definitely. We've had a number of unveilings and stuff. Local brewer Coopers, they've got behind the event and they've sponsored and they've released a commemorative can for the draft, with Coopers draft, with panels on actually printed on the can. Coopers are famous for doing that sort of thing. They've had a number of events they've supported in the past, and they've done a commemorative beer can to commemorate it. And you know, they've done that again with this, so they got behind the event. We've had numerous displays in Rundle Mall, which is our famous shopping area there in the heart of the city. I think they've actually even gone as far as I'm hearing talk of Le Mans shop, which seems to be in the same vein as the old Grand Prix shop that used to be down the east end of town, so you get your tickets and memorabilia and stuff from there. So they've
brand new stag corner sort of end of town.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's from memory that's where it was last time. That obviously closed up in '95, but they're looking at doing the same thing again. I believe they've established that.
Yes, I actually remember that shop. It was sort of like from where I used to hang out across the road, two doors down, but we were closer to the stag.
That's right. Exactly.
And what the stag provided.
Well, that's it. the good thing is the stag, very famous part of the course this year. Obviously, we're running. For the Le Mans race, we're actually running the full Grand Prix circuit as opposed to the Clipsal, where they run the shortened one, which goes up, I think, Bar Hills Road. This time it's going all the way down to Rundle Road and taking that famous brewery bend, which sweeps onto the old Braddon Strait, which, with the sports prototypes, you're looking at sort of speeds in excess of 300 kilometres per hour. And that going through the night should be quite interesting, spectacular sight to behold.
Actually, I think it'll be interesting to compare when the times are put in terms of the lap times. The lap times and also the terminal velocity down that Braddon Strait of the sports prototypes versus the Formula 1 cars as they were when the Grand Prix was last held at Adelaide. I think it's going to be very interesting to see just how fast these sports prototypes will be.
Well, obviously there's sort of 5 or 6 years technology on from there, but certainly your comparison there, as you say, would be quite interesting. I'll certainly be one of these stats bugs that gets his old Grand Prix annual out and has a look at what the fastest lap and what the speed down there were, and I'm sure there'll be sorts of comparisons made in the media.
Now, one of the support events they've announced, which actually you sent me the brochure, and you've given me the bug. It's a...
That's it, literally the bug.
It's a bug. It's the Le Mans bug, and it's a VW Pro-Am race, and... For $41,950, including GST, you get a brand new VW Beetle, including on-road costs and a host of other extras that makes it possible for you to drive the new car in a Pro-Am racing partnership with a professional racing driver. I reckon, you know, it includes racing helmets,
yep,
and your race suit, roll cage, safety harness, fire extinguish, etc. Your pre-race, your race entry fees, insurance, whole nine. I tell you what, if somebody wants to promote their business, because you also get to stick all your sponsorship over the bonnet and the front guard of the car and so on.
That's the main advantage, as you say, with the sponsorship. You have the right to sell off sponsorship areas on the vehicle. I mean, you can pull in anyone if you like, but obviously businesses in Adelaide, which hopefully will be taking advantage of it, and even, you know, interstate, just to get their name on a vehicle. As you see, the point in the brochure's got the 53, the famous Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo number. They've been had that car in Rundle Mall. I've sat in one of them. It's quite an amusing little thing to have. I don't know whether the thing comes complete with the flower vase for the dashboard. I'm not sure if that's a racing accessory or an acceptable cans approved accessory, but
I'm sure it'll be quite an interesting event, that one.
Does that might be sort of a bit contained radio, because I remember one of the celebrity races they ran once upon a time had they made an average. That would work for her, but I don't think it accepts it for anybody else.
No, I don't think so.
But actually, I reckon that'll be a great race, because you've got, you know, the professionals and the amateurs, three races, and a great thing. Now, of course, they've also announced the post-race conference, post-race concerts, and who are going to be the big events showcase there?
Well, we've got 10 p.m. on the Sunday night, which is New Year's Eve, the 31st. After the big race finishes and the checkered flag falls, there'll actually be two separate concerts to cater for different musical tastes. Pitside Party will be held behind the main grandstand, and will feature the big acts In Excess, featuring John Stevens, and also Taxi Ride. And that's going to be probably a huge concert there, which I think it's in, if you go, anyone who's familiar with going to the Clipsal 500, I think it's the Clipsal Gold Club or something that sits behind the main grandstand. And there'll also be another one over in CBC Oval, which is the opposite side of the circuit, probably just sits inside the Brabham Strait area. And there'll be a different style of entertainment there, which will be Living End, UMI and Spiderbait. So definitely something for all tastes there.
And of course, the beauty of it is the time of year when the event is on is probably, it's damn hot down there in Adelaide for sure. But it's sort of led up to New Year, so you've got between Christmas and New Year, perfect time for someone to go down and actually take a longer break. I know I am, so I'm going to cover the event along with
looking forward to seeing you.
Yes, with the good wife Carol and probably some others and members of the crew.
Junior
Sandy will be along sitting in the back seat. But it's the thing, that after having gone to the race and a great place for a race it is, do you think that the opportunity, like we're going to be doing, wandering around the Barossa Valley and the surrounding region to have a look at what else is available there in South Australia? So it's great timing, really, for what they've got on.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of businesses, we have a lot of people in sort of perhaps the manufacturing area as well that they close down over Christmas, so if people are enforced, like an enforced 2-week leave they have, what better way to spend your leave than come down to Adelaide to see the race and then go have a look around the Barossa and perhaps Clare Valley, McLaren Vale, our famous wine districts. It's just, you know, a great place to come and have your summer holiday.
Now, of course, things don't finish there. You've got that at the end of the year. You've got the Classic Adelaide Rally next weekend. Then I think we've got Wakefield Park is next weekend. Then 2 weekends after that, the BOC Gas Super Tours, they make their way to Mallawa for their annual visit there.
That's right. We were sort of a bit unsure as to whether we were getting them. It was penciled in the date very early in the year as... because of the Olympic Games shuffling everybody's calendars around, we weren't quite sure whether it was ever going to go ahead. Fortunately it has, I'm happy to say, and November the 12th, or 11th and 12th, we've got the BOC Gases featuring the future tourers as well. We've got a round of the ROH Wheels Commodore Cup, Mitsubishi Mirage Series, HQ Holdens, and the new saloon class, which made its debut at the Adelaide 500 or Clipsal 500 this year, which is the old EA EV Falcons and VN VP Commodores. So that's a growing class here, and we've got quite a bit of support for that. Formula V's, so it's sort of every budget sort of thing there that you can cater for. We've got a lot of club type stuff and club cars apparently on the program as well, according to my flyer poster I've got here. So yeah, that's going to be a fairly packed event. Obviously, numbers of super tourers sadly a little bit down, but certainly plenty to keep people entertained that weekend. And I know last year, although we haven't got Jim Richards this year, last year, although it bucketed down with rain here, we've got a different time of the year, because it was run in August last year, and I think the last 2 or 3 years we've had rain. Get it in November, hopefully should be some much better weather. Richards and Morris put on a fantastic battle last year, which was just cut and thrust, but obviously fair. And there's just the quality of the racing, even though there's a smaller field, is just fantastic.
I think too, Wakefield Park next weekend will probably be a good indicator for us, because we've got Paul Moss, but we've got people like John Henderson who's taking the time to do some work on his car. We've now got Dwayne Bewley, who will be sitting in the second of the Peugeot 406, because he should be in good shape.
Yes.
Tony Newman's been testing his other 406 fairly heavily. And you can never discount somebody like Peter Hills and young Alan Gurr, and they've all had that break since the last round and this next round at Wakefield Park to get themselves into shape.
We'll look at the battle that Peter Hills and John Henderson gave Paul Morris back, I think it was the early round in Oran Park. Yeah, both those guys actually, I think, leading the races at certain points during the day.
Yeah.
They're very competitive, and it'll be nice to see a manufacturer actually, we won't mention names, get behind some of those things, but we know which ones they are.
Yeah, they should look a little bit further than what they are. So, Dave, thanks for joining us this evening on Inside Motorsport. We'll probably chat to you next weekend to see the results of the Classic Adelaide Rally.
Live from the rally.
Live from the rally, and we'll probably talk to you again fortnight after that for the BRC Galaxy.
Yep, it's going to be a busy time.
No worries.
Good
on you. Dave, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, our man from South Australia, David Langfield, and of course David will be covering the Classic Adelaide Rally for us next weekend as well. We'll be coming from Wakefield Park for the latest round of the BRC Gases Australian Super Touring Championship. That's next weekend, the 28th and 29th of October. Super Touring Future Tours Commodore Cup, Mirages, the Daewoo Kumo Challenge, Production Sports Cars, Street Stands Invited GTP. They have a $30 family ticket for 2 adults and 2 children under 16, $22 ticket for adults, $15 students and concession, children under 16 free, and free pit lane entry, and they have children's rides, etc. If you want more information about the ticketing, etc., for Wakefield Park, their number is 02-4822-2811, and they're on Braidwood Road, Goulburn. It should be a good weekend's racing there next weekend. Just in some other news, the news this week just announced recently that Cristiano De Marta will be becoming one of the drivers of the Newman Haas FedEx Car Championship racing team, replacing Michael Andretti. And the World Sprint Car Series have announced that they are cancelling all their West Australian rounds. The fact that the new Cronulla Motorplex, which is currently construction as a replacement for Perth's famous Claremont Speedway, will not be completed in time for traditional series swing in the West. Construction delays, together with concerns by some teams over the high cost of travel, have caused the series organisers to suspend all rounds in Western Australia this summer, including the planned two-night Bunbury Show and the NASR promoted round at Kalgoorlie. All other rounds will run on the scheduled dates as planned, with the first two rounds at Newcastle on November 11th and Parramatta November 18th being featured in the live telecast on the C7 cable network carried by both Optus and Austar. So we've got a new calendar for the World Series Sprint Cars, as I say, starting on Saturday, November 11th at Newcastle Speedway, then Saturday the 16th of November at Parramatta City Speedway, Saturday, December 2nd, Review Speedway at Murray Bridge down in South Australia, Friday the 5th and Saturday the 6th at Avalon Raceway, Geelong, and December 27th of December, Wednesday, Speedway City in Adelaide, Friday the 29th, Blue Ribbon Speedway, Horsham in Victoria in December, and Saturday the 30th, Nowra Raceway in Nowra in Victoria. Then in January, the 1st at Warrnambool, the 2nd Mount Gambier, the 5th and 6th at Parramatta, the 10th at Archfield up in Brisbane, the 12th and 13th, back to Archfield in Brisbane, 17th of January, Newcastle Speedway, and then finishing up on the 20th of January at Parramatta once again in Sydney. That's all for this week on Inside Motorsport. We'll be back again next week. Craig Revell should be back from overseas, and we'll probably know where Peter Morton's at with things. And that's all for me, Colin, for this week. We'll catch you all again next week.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat, with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.